Hello, my name's Gary O'Donoghue, reporting for the first time for Blind Cool Tech. I've been on the list now for a few weeks and looking at the website for the same amount of time. Enjoyed very much the podcasts people have been putting up on a whole range of equipment and experiences, and I decided it was time perhaps to put something back if I could. So I'm proposing to do a review of a piece of equipment that I use all the time for work and for play. It's a digital recorder. It's made by a Swiss company called Nagra, who have been in the audio business for many, many years. And the model is the Ares P2, that's Ares, letter P, and Roman numerals 2. I understand there is an Ares P2 Plus out at the moment, which offers 24-bit recording, but this unit I have, the Ares P2, is a 16-bit recording machine. It records onto compact flash cards, and I currently have a 2 gigabyte flash card in this, which will give on wave recording at 44.1 CD quality sampling rate something over 3 hours of usable recording time. What I propose to do is to just outline a few of the basic advantages that I find particularly with this recorder and disadvantages. I then propose to do a sort of fairly detailed tour of the unit itself and the buttons and where things are and how it works. And then finally, I'll do a brief description of some of the menus and some of the useful options in the menus and how I found them in terms of accessibility as a totally blind person. I suppose the big advantage of the Nagra, and it's about 18 months old now, so other units have started to surpass it in this respect, is that it is quite small. It weighs a pound. It's about three or four inches wide. It's about an inch and a half thick, and it's about seven or eight inches long. It can be held quite comfortably in one hand. It also comes with a microphone directly attached to its top. It's an omnidirectional microphone that comes as standard. Extremely good quality, and it means that there are no trailing mic cables. And that's quite a good thing for someone in my position as a radio reporter, because I can then just have it in one hand and not have to hold the unit in one hand and the microphone in another. I can still actually be fairly mobile. So that's one of its advantages from my point of view. It also, in terms of advantages, has menus that do not wrap around. So providing you know your menu structure or you've written that down in some way, you can be sure to know where you are in a menu, because you can be sure that you're not going to go past the end of it. The machine also does not remember where you were in the menus if you go back into the menus, which a lot of machines do. That's a positive thing in my view. And also there's some audio feedback on menu selections. So for example, when you complete a task like deleting a file, you will get a bleep out of the machine in the headphones if you've got them plugged in. Or if you go to reformat the card, when you do the final confirmation of that, you get a bleep. The machine also offers a double bleep when there's a problem. So, for example, if you plug in your headphones and switch the machine on and you hear a double bleep, you know that means that a message has come up on the screen on the LCD. Now, you don't know what that message is, but it's bound to be a problem message. It's either a low battery message or not very much room on the card message or unformatted card or some such. So there's a limited amount of audio feedback in terms of what you are doing. It also allows for you to set it up so that as soon as you switch the machine on, you're in monitoring mode. So you can hear what's coming in through the microphone in your headphones. That's quite good, because that obviously means that you know when the machine is on and you know when it's off. So I find that to be a big advantage. The main disadvantage, I would say, is that it's extremely expensive. When I bought this unit about 18 months ago or so, it was at about, it was with an extra microphone which I bought from Nagra 2, it came to around £2,000. So that's around 3,000 US, I would think. So it is a very expensive piece of kit. Not for everyone's taste, clearly. And Nagra have a reputation for being rather expensive. They have in recent months started to bring out some cheaper units. They have a small unit now called the Ares M. that's M for mother, which is a much smaller unit than this, although it has a gigabyte of storage built into it that you can't get at. You can obviously download via its USB, etc., etc., but you can't actually put in larger amounts of memory. So back to the Nagra. That's a sort of brief description of its advantages and disadvantages from my point of view. It has a reasonably good automatic level control, which I quite often use in difficult situations. And it also has some quite good sort of ergonomic features in terms of where your fingers fall while you're holding it and walking around, that sort of thing. Now, let me give you a fairly detailed description of the unit. As I said, it only weighs a pound, and the orientation of the unit is its longer side is the vertical side. In other words, I'm holding it in front of me now, and across ways it's about 4 inches, but going upwards it's about 7 or 8 inches. And then right at the top of the unit is where the built-in microphone screws in. I've got a windshield on it at the moment, just here. That microphone can be unscrewed, and you can screw in a cable which comes with the unit. It's a 12-pin connector, screws into the top of the unit, and at the other end of that, you could have an XLR connection to plug into a standard microphone. The unit does supply 48-volt phantom power if it's a condenser microphone that has that capacity. If you want to put that on the end of it, you can, or it can just run a dynamic microphone through that cable. So, for example, in those cases where you might want to use a shotgun microphone to get very specific recordings from some distance, I would unscrew the little built-in mic at the top, plug in a cable, plug in my shotgun microphone to the end of that cable, and you're away. It looks rather like, someone said to me, in fact a member of parliament here said to me that it looks rather like a whiskey bottle, because it has sort of shoulders at the top. So the microphone sticks out of the top of the unit, and just below it are a pair of shoulders, rather like those whiskey bottles that you see. And it has a rather stylish design. It's a very metallic unit. I have dropped it onto stone before, and it's been fine. You can get to carry a small sort of mobile phone type carry case for it, which does protect it a little bit from falling onto those sorts of surfaces, and I would certainly recommend that. Now, next to where the microphone plugs in, there are a couple of sockets. On the left-hand side, as I'm holding the unit, there's a LiMo line-out connector. That's a 2-pin LiMo line-out. LiMo is a fairly specialised connector. You don't see it very often. And it's probably not very necessary on this sort of unit, particularly because you can remove the compact flash card. And indeed, on the other side of the microphone, there is a USB connection to connect to your PC for downloading if you want to do it that way. It is only USB 1.1, so the transfer rates are quite slow. And I tend to use the unit, the recordings from the unit, by removing the flash card and putting that straight into the side of my laptop. Now, coming onto the front of the unit, the very top of the front of the unit has an LCD display. It's about 2 inches by an inch and a half, I suppose. I'm told it's quite clear. On switch on, it displays the recording level that you're currently monitoring at. Because I mentioned earlier on, you can hear the monitoring through the headphones pretty much straight away. And if you're in mono, that will just show one line. And if you're in stereo, that'll show two lines with a sort of an area, a green area to aim at in terms of your level. That also shows there's a little battery meter in the bottom left of the display, I'm told, which is a fairly crude battery monitor, but if you wanted to get a sighted person to tell you how that was, that's where to tell them to look. And it also tells you how much recording time there is left on the card when you're in that stopped mode. Now, below the screen, you have the main controls. And there are, I'm going to count them as we speak, there are 4, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 buttons altogether. On the left-hand side of the unit is a power-on button at the top of this set of buttons. That's surrounded by a kind of lip because these are quite small rubberized buttons, and they've surrounded it by a lip so you don't accidentally press that power on or power off button. So you rather specifically have to get the tip of your finger and push down on it from the top of that in order to switch that on, because just pressing generally in that area means you're just pressing the outside lip around the button and not actually activating itself. Just to the right of the power on button is a cursor cross, a typical cursor cross, four buttons, up and down, left and right, with a circular button in the middle as your enter or select button. And to the right of the cursor cross, you have two more triangular buttons, one triangle facing upwards, pointing upwards, one pointing downwards, equilateral triangles. And they are, well, they do various things. They're the up and down volume controls if you're in playback mode, or they vary things like the recording level if you're in recording manual record mode, and they do one or two other things too. I'll refer to those as plus and minus, and the cursor up and down as cursor up and down, because that's rather confusing. Now, under these, we have another four buttons, rubberized buttons in a row. The leftmost is left, the second one is right, the third one is play, and the fourth one on the right-hand side is right. In other words, left and right take you forward and back tracks. Stop and play are self-explanatory. Holding down left and right within a track while you're playing will do that kind of digital skipping through the track that we all know too well. Just above the left key, the left button of those four, is the record button. And that is a square button, and it has a dot in the middle of it. And it's the only one of the buttons that has a dot. And that sits there on the left-hand side of the unit, just above and to the left of the left key, the leftwards key, as it were, and about a quarter of an inch below, half an inch below the power key. Looking at the right-hand side, right-hand edge of the unit, I'm turning it so that the flatter face is now facing to the left, and I'm holding the edge of it towards me. Towards the top is another button, which is called the side key. And that falls quite nicely when you hold it in your hand. Your thumb falls quite nicely on that. And that's a programmable button. And that can be set up to start the machine into record, and then the next press can create a new track, or it can create marks while you're in recording, and those marks can be read by a number of digital editing packages on PCs. And it can do another number of other things. It can be a start-stop button as well, and various things like that. In terms of controls, that's it. On the very bottom of the unit, there is a headphone connector on the left-hand side and a power connector on the right-hand side. Now, on the right-hand edge of the unit, towards the bottom, is a little button, a little sort of kind of seesaw-type button, where you press one end of it and the other end flicks up. And if you do that, which I'm going to do now, the bottom half of the unit sort of swings away on a hinge, and that reveals underneath, poking out, a compact flash card, which has a button, sort of typical eject button, next to it, which if you press, you can then remove the compact flash card from inside the unit. It sits in one of those PC card adapters. So it's the size of a full PCMCIA card in the adapter, which means you can slot it into the side of most laptops straight away, or you can remove the actual compact flash card from the adapter and put it into a card reader. If that's your preference, or if you want to put it into a card reader that's connected to a desktop machine. I'll just slide that back in. Now, in the bit of the unit that's sort of swung away on the hinge, and it's quite a sturdy hinge, doesn't feel flimsy in any way, is another button there, which I'm going to press, and that releases a sort of metal plate which covers the battery compartment. And the batteries sit in the bottom, very bottom of the unit, and they are five AA batteries. I've got a rechargeable Ansman NIMH 2600 batteries in there at the moment, which get a pretty good record time. I would look to be getting 6 or 7 hours recording out of those batteries. You can put ordinary alkaline batteries, of course, in. There is a little tiny switch inside the battery compartment, and that's quite an important switch because you can charge batteries in the unit itself, rechargeable ones. You can charge through the unit itself, and that switch has to be in a particular position to do that. If you try and plug the charger in with alkaline batteries in the machine and that switch in the wrong position, you can have some difficulties, let's say. So that's really a physical tour of the unit. The only other thing to say is on the very back of the machine, which is completely clear of controls, it's just effectively a sheet of metal, but there is one little grill towards the top, towards where the microphone is, and that's a little tiny loudspeaker. So that's one of the big advantages for me, that I don't even have to carry headphones sometimes with this unit. If I can be sure it's on, and I can, then if I really want to be uncluttered, I can monitor or check my thing is recording properly by just playing back and using the little monitor speaker. And obviously that's useful if you want to play things to other people without going through the headphones. That's pretty much it for the physical description of the unit. I now want to talk about a few of the some of the basic menu operations on the Nagra Aries P2. The menus are got into by pressing the center key, what I call the center key, which is the center of the cursor cross, the round key at the middle of the cursor cross when the unit is in stop. That brings up a list of 7 top-level menus, and I'm just going to run through those very briefly. The top one is called Directory. Pressing the center key, and as I said to you before, the menus always start at the top. They never leave you in a previous position, so you always know you're at the top, and you can't wrap around in these menus. So the top option in the top level of menus is called Directory. Pressing Enter on that brings up a list of tracks. Now, I know with some other recorders, you would then have to cursor to the particular track you wanted to do anything about. The great thing about the Nagra is that it places the highlight on the track that you were previously just listening to. So if you were listening to a track and you knew this was something you wanted to delete, for example, you could press stop. You could press the center key of the cursor cross to go into the menus. Press it again to choose the directory option, which is at the top. You'll then on the track number that you were just playing. You don't have to cursor to the position. It's, if you like, it's one of the exceptions of the menu system. Most of the time you are at the top of the menus, you have to cursor to the place, and for us that's great. And actually in this circumstances, the one time when it breaks its own rule is also great for us. I know with some of the other recorders I've looked at, you go into the menus and you then have to cursor to the track you want to do anything about. Anyway, so that's very good. So once you're into that list of tracks, you can then also press the center key to get to a list of options for that track. The top option is quit the directory structure altogether. The second one is delete file, and you can press that to delete, and it asks you to give it another press to confirm, and then it asks you as a final stage to press the right-hand cursor key to confirm yet again. So it really makes sure that you want to do what you want to do. Other options in that menu include delete to end, for example, so you can delete from that track to the end of the card if you want to clear some space. That's quite a useful option. I use that quite a lot of the time. Back to the top level of menus, and by the way, you go out of directory by using that quit directory option. Anywhere else in the menus, you just use the left-hand cursor key and that backs you up. Second option down in the main menu structure is loudspeaker. So cursoring down once from the top of the main menu gets you to loudspeaker. You press the center key to go into that. There are only two options here, on and off. Top one is off, second one down is on. And you just cursor to that and you press the center key, and you'll hear the Nagra in your headphones give you a quick beep when you've chosen one of those two options. And that's what it tends to do when you complete an action within the menus. You get a bleep at the end of it, which is also a good kind of confirmation for us who can't see. The next menu item in the main menu structure, after directory at the top, loudspeaker, is tools. And in the tools menu, I won't go through all of these things, but you can format a card. You can name files in that menu as well. The Aries P2 by default gives the files you create on its card a number starting at 1001.wav and going upwards. Well, that's fine, and I don't often bother to name files, partly because the naming procedure is quite tricky for a blind person. There's a sort of grid that comes up on the LCD and you have to cursor around it selecting letter by letter, so I tend not to bother with doing that. So that's the tools menu, which has card formatting, file naming, and one or two other things in which I won't go into now. The next menu down on the main structure is called templates, and this is extremely useful. This has 8 options in it. The top 4 are called recall 1-4, and the bottom 4 are called store 1-4. So they're presets, effectively. They're templates, so you can set up your machine, choosing all the various different settings. And then when you've got that, you can go into the menus again, down to templates, down to store 1 or store 2 or store 3 or store 4, and select that. And it saves that group of settings you've got set up at that time on the machine into that recall. So at any time, you can go back into the menus and go down to your templates and choose recall 1 or recall 2, recall 3, or recall 4 to get a whole bunch of settings applied. And so, for example, I have recall 1 set at the moment to be mono mic with automatic record levels. I have recall 2 set as mono mic with manual record levels. I have recall 3 set to stereo mic with automatic record levels, and recall 4 set to stereo mic with manual record levels, because typically that's the sort of thing I want to do. Sometimes, most of the time, I record in mono. Sometimes I want to record in stereo. Sometimes I'm in a situation where I haven't got time or the ability to spend a lot of time fiddling around with levels and changing them. It's just got to be done and dusted pretty quick. And so I would choose the automatic record level options in those circumstances. So the templates menu, I find, is extremely useful. And you can configure all sorts of options throughout the menus to be part of those templates, obviously. Now, going back to the main menu, the next option after templates is called settings. And this is quite a big menu, but there's quite a lot of important stuff in here. The top option in the settings menu is called input filter. And this is something I use quite a lot. It's a low cut filter. So it takes out some of the bottom end of the signal. And it's particularly good, I find, if you're outside, particularly good if there's any wind about outside or if there's a lot of traffic about outside. Just putting in a low cut filter, and quite a lot of the units nowadays, I think, have this sort of option. And indeed, some condenser microphones have this as an option on them as well, that you can get rid of quite a lot of that sort of rumbly noise you get, which can be just sounds rather unnerving, rather foreign, just doesn't sound like the kind of thing you hear when you're outside. The microphone is one of those circumstances where the microphone is not as or too good in a sense, much too good for its own good, if you like. So it picks up all that kind of rumble which you don't want to hear when you play it back. So I use that low cut filter a lot, and in that menu option, again, there's just on and off effectively, and you get a bleep when you choose off or on, and you hear that immediately in your cans, in your headphones, you hear the change. So that's quite good. The next option down in the settings menu is ALC, automatic level control, and that's again an on and off situation in there, so that's pretty straightforward. The next one is an ALC threshold, and this is about the point at which the ALC kicks in, and that's various values, various dB values. That's something you just have to play with, I think. Set it where you like it so you don't get too much pumping when the ALC kicks in. There is also an option in there to set it with the plus and minus keys. These are the two triangular keys on the right-hand side of the unit to the right of the cursor cross. And you can set that, in a sense, on the fly when you're in recording. The next option after the ALC threshold is ALC speed. And that just has three options in there: slow, medium, and fast. And that's the extent to which the ALC kicks in and how quickly it does. So that's an attempt to try and avoid the kind of pumping you get, or to mask it in some way so that people don't notice it quite so much. Next option in that menu is beep, and that's the beep I've been talking about in terms of the menus and the error messages you can get when the machine switches on. And that's an on and off, so you pretty much want that on if you can't see. The next one is file format, and that has a whole bunch of options, basically split into stereo and mono, and ranging from the thing that changes with each of those options is the sampling frequency. So there's a whole bunch of from 48, I think it's down to 22.5 if I remember. So 48, 44.1, 32, 22.5 for mono, and then another whole bunch from 48 down to 22.5 for stereo. It might go lower than that, I can't quite remember. But I pretty much stick to 44.1. I think it's a good rule of thumb to keep your sample frequency sample rate at the same for everything you do, I would say, because then you don't run into all sorts of difficulties with when you try and mix pieces of audio that have come from different places. If it's all been recorded at 44.1, you're going to have a lot fewer problems. So I would recommend sticking to 44.1. There's then in that top level of the settings menu, there's a backlight option, which doesn't detain us very long. There's an output mode, which is where you control whether or not the machine is in automatic kind of monitor mode when you first switch it on. And then there's an output level. And the final option in the settings menu is the side key, which we talked about before. That's the little key on the right-hand edge of the unit, which your thumb sort of naturally falls upon as you hold it in your hand. And that can be configured to do a number of things, such as first press, it could be record. The second press, while it's in record, you can create a new index, so it creates a new actual new file on the card when carry on recording. It can be set to first press, record, second press, an edit mark, which will be recognised by some editors out there, and a bunch of other options, which I won't bother going into now. So that's the settings menu. So just to recap, we've had on the top level of menus, we have directory at the top, loudspeaker, then tools, templates, settings. The final two options I'm not going to go into very much. One is auto record, which is a whole group of settings which allows the recorder to start recording automatically, given a noise prompt, if you like, given some audio activity. I've never used this. I can't really think what you would use it for. I mean, I suppose if you wanted to monitor a room or some sort of security situation, you might want to use it in that regard, or you wanted to, I don't know, see how loud your own snoring was, for example, by putting it on while you go to sleep and just playing it back in the morning and see how awful it sounds. You could use it for that, I guess. But that's got a group of settings in there, for example, at the dB level that the recording will be kicked in and how long it will carry on recording without any more noise and things like that. The final option in the main menu is input. And in there is a couple of quite important settings. One is that's where you can switch on the 48 volt phantom power. Word of warning here, with Nagra's own little screw-on microphones that it supplies with the unit, they do not require phantom power. So if you plug in a condenser microphone via the lead and use phantom power, and then plug in the Nagra, its own little plug-in microphone onto the top of the unit without switching off phantom power, you would destroy the electronics in the Nagra microphone, and they are extraordinarily expensive. They're about $500. The Nagra's own microphones are about $500. I've got two of those. One is a mono omnidirectional one, and one is a little stereo screw-in one that they do for the unit as well. So word of warning there on phantom power. You've got to be careful with that. And then the other option is to do with mono and stereo, which I don't ever touch because that can be configured elsewhere. So that's a quick kind of skip around the menu options there. I have written these down, so I'm not assuming really that anyone's going to rush out and buy this thing, A, because it's 18 months old now and there are quite a lot of other options out there, but B, because it is quite expensive. But I do have the menus written and their structures written down in some detail for my own purposes, so if anyone happens to have to use one at any stage, they'd be very welcome to that information. And you can contact me on the BCT list, of course, for that purpose. I know some of you will be interested to know what I've been recording this review on. So just PS in terms of that, I've been recording on a Marantz solid-state recorder. It's the PMD-670. It's a couple of years old now. It's a solid-state recorder, records on the compact flash. It's pretty fully featured. It also includes the ability to record MP2 and MP3. Now, the Nagra doesn't include that. They do sell a software add-on to allow you to record MP2 and possibly MP3, but they charge a great deal of money for those software add-ons. And frankly, I don't think it's worth it because you can take your WAV file out of here and convert it into MP3 with a cheap program on the PC. But going back to the Marantz, that's a fully featured unit. It's larger, It has quite a lot of professional features on it. And if there's any interest, I could easily do a review of that as well, because I know that's in quite widespread use in the sound recording industry. And in conjunction with the PMD670, I'm using an Audio-Technica AT825 stereo microphone. Anyway, I hope that's been useful. I hope there's nothing I've forgot to describe about the unit. It is a nice unit. It is a very expensive unit. It is pretty much reporter-proof in the sense that one-touch recording gets it going. And I've used it for 18 months now without any problems at all, and certainly a lot fewer problems than I used to have with mini discs. So it gets my thumbs up, and hope you've enjoyed this, and hope to talk to you soon.